Is the Challenge USA headed in the right direction? We talk about that. And Telemarketers on HBO has zaniness in droves, but does it have heart?
Alabama take projection.
Hello, thanks for tuning in, Taking It Down, the TV and streaming podcast from the Alabama Take, where we prompt conversations for thoughtful, busy TV devotees, all from us, your irreverent outsiders. I'm Blaine Duncan. I'm the editor-in-chief of the Alabama Take. I always could not help dissecting why I like what I like and why I dislike what I dislike when it comes to TV, movies, and more. I have an English degree and a side hustle as an English teacher, so I'll try my best to offer insight that you can use for conversation with others or even with us or even just to think about. Luckily, my ideas aren't the only set of viewpoints on this podcast each week, as with me are the other hosts, Adam Morrow's an erudite traveling and studio musician with a penchant for fine literature. Donovan Reinwald is a media specialist with encyclopedic knowledge on film, television, and more. And Natalie Morrow, she's the first person to ask about fantasy, sci-fi, comics, trashy reality TV, and she's a huge Beyoncé fan. From us, you'll get the obvious, but you'll get the obscure. We are here for the TV and streaming obsessed who are just too busy for anything more than the show or movie itself. We'll give the outside of Hollywood analysis, and like a lot of the Alabama Take productions, it'll come with zero Southern stereotype. Hey everyone, it's us. We're getting into the real show. We're easing out of the YouTube version, which is video, and you can see us. We tack on a little extra information. Well, maybe not information. We tack on a little extra segment for you. This week, we talked about the passing of Jimmy Buffett, whom we all kind of revere in a loving way, I think, in this way that, you know, we see more of him than just the goofiness that maybe the general public would have seen. So you can go hear that. We talk about Burning Man, because why not? Here we are, though. First segment. We're going to talk about two things today. We're going to talk about the Challenge USA just a little, and we're going to talk about the HBO / Max. I think it was on HBO too.
I think it was HBO documentary.
No, it was. You're right, because I remember.
I mean, the branding is exactly. Right.
There you go. That's right. Donovan's right. We're talking about telemarketers. We'll get into that in the second segment. We're all caught up on the Challenge USA, aren't we?
We are.
Lord, yes.
Those of us who celebrate.
I'm agnostic.
Yeah, it's okay. We tried to get you in on the challenge once, and you watched, what, two episodes? And just...
I watched a couple episodes, and I was like, this is, I don't get it.
I'm too good for this. I'm Donovan.
You got the vibe.
Donovan's not too good for this. No, okay, I think here's one thing that might have turned Donovan off. It may have been the novel's worth of text messages I sent him about CT. May have just been too much. But Donovan J. Reinwald is not too good for the challenge. Donovan, how much college football have you watched this Labor Day weekend?
Oh, Lord, I'm going to watch more tonight. Hell, I even looked at what Rutgers was doing. Not much is the answer, but neither is Northwestern, so good for them.
That Donovan will put his eye on Clemson and Duke tomorrow night, don't you worry.
I'm not as excited about that one, but I do think the LSU-Florida State one could be fun.
Could be.
Yeah, but you're going to watch the game tomorrow night.
Yeah, that's true, just to see if there are any heads-up plays.
This is what I'm saying. He's not too good to watch an hour-long edition of The Challenge.
Yeah, I gave it the old college try.
There's any heads-up plays?
He said that. He said that in Clemson Duke.
I feel like I've just been transported back to college.
Well, for listeners who don't know, there's a running joke amongst our crew that I don't even know if it's a running joke. It's just that Donovan.
No, it's just real.
Is the guy to watch football with, because you're never certain if he knows exactly what he's talking about or nothing of what he's talking about. Am I right about this, Adam?
He would say things like, if the team that you have a rooting interest for is on defense, he would say, they really got to watch the play action here.
Yeah.
Which is true basically all times of the game.
You got to watch your play action.
To some degree. Always. But he would trot it out and time it really well, or say something like, they've really got to establish a run game. Something that kind of like put it like one step beyond like, the team's got to play well. You know what I mean?
Like go, it's, go, it blitz, sounds, blitz. Like,
Just a little
right,
bummer.
Right. Get him. None of that kind of stuff. He wouldn't do that. It's always, there's enough actual football knowledge in what he says. And it used to irritate people that we watched the games with because they couldn't figure out if they're like, "What? How is he doing this? The guy that always has, you know, three books that he's reading at the same time and weighs, I don't know, a buck 35 at that time, soaking wet. How does he know what's going on here?"
I love it.
Now he's blossomed into the man who pays his mortgage off of college football Saturdays.
Definitely true. And sometimes,
or more likely, college football Tuesdays and Wednesdays and Thursdays.
I was going to say definitely college football Thursday nights. That's a big, that's a big pool you're fishing in.
The man loves some action.
Who doesn't? Yeah.
And not to get crazily tangential, but I love the notion of someone who's an intellectual but also loves the challenge or college football or, you know, take your pick. The dichotomy there is wonderful.
Why not? You know, not to get too, like, we're all from Tuscaloosa, and there was always, I'm sure this is true in any major college football town, this vein of, like, well, I like art, and I like these things, and I scored this on my ACT, so, like, I can't care about college football Saturdays, which is just so dumb. Sports are great.
Didn't you used to say that when we tried to get you to watch The Challenge in college?
Yeah, I did. And I, you know what? I was wrong. Mm.
A grown man admitting his failures. another facet of that is in Tuscaloosa, you also had the Rock and Rollers who would cross their arms at the games, or the idea.
Well, that's what I mean by people who are like, too hip. You know, I'm an artist. Mm-hmm. I do, yeah, like I'm too cool for this or whatever.
I think the Dexatines really kicked that door down for some people, as Elliot every show would yell something about the Tide or Nick Saban or something.
Or TJ Lavin.
Why not?
Or what?
Or TJ Lavin. Should Elliot never bring that up at a show?
Not in my recollections. We're caught up on the Challenge USA. Were we thrilled to see Michaela in elimination at the very least?
I wasn't.
Yes.
Why not, Natalie? Because she won?
No, I kind of like Michaela.
Oh, I thought you were in agreement with us last week that Michaela kind of sucks. But maybe that was just Adam.
I could have been, and I just don't remember. But the last two episodes we've watched, I really like her.
How so? How's she come around?
I don't know. She's just coming across as... There are some people that come in from like Survivor and Big Brother that think, oh, I know how this works. I can do this. But then they clearly don't. And I kind of feel like maybe she does a little bit. She actually does kind of get it. And she does, but she still isn't doing like the challenge stupid drama. She's very like her when Wes says, why won't you talk to me? Or what do you have against me? Or I can't figure you out. And her answer was just like, good. Like, I thought that was great.
Really? Yeah. Wes was feigning his sadness and desperation.
I don't know that he was faint. Like, that didn't come across as him.
His feelings were really hurt, weren't they?
I think he was. I don't know that his feelings were hurt. I think he's just got a lot going on. He's just got a lot of feelings.
Hmm. He comes back from elimination, and then Michaela goes in this most recent episode. And at the very, very end of the most recent episode, it's going to go to an individual game. What are your thoughts? I love it. When they switch it out like that, I just love it.
I do too. And I have, Natalie was kind of rolling her eyes at the, I kind of laid out a sequence of events and said, this worked out pretty well for the producers. And you always kind of wonder, are they waiting for certain things in game to happen so that they can pull a switch to a different format? And that's probably not true because the games are so elaborate now that they seem to take maybe days to set up, so they probably can't change on the fly too quickly. But it is good that Michaela was about to, you know, Wes is able to navigate his way into the loving arms of Tori and Bananas. And then as soon as Michaela is about to blow that up, it switches to individual. Always just kind of makes you wonder, you know. I'm pro protecting the faces of the challenge. Mm-hmm. I think they have earned this. But if it's pure randomness that it happened now or not, I'm with you. The individual game will be very fun to watch and to see some of the folks who have been beating their chests a little bit about how well they're doing have to do it. Cassidy, people like her, Can they do it outside the shelter of a team? Always fun. Nothing real. I think, you know, Natalie, you said I used to make fun of this show. I think what got me in was watching Zach get his comeuppance on what season of that is that where he just completely breaks down in the final?
Oh, Free Agents.
Yeah, he's like screaming on the side of the mountain saying he can't do it. And Laurel's standing over him like, you were being such a baby right now. Nothing is better on reality TV to me than people getting comeuppance. And I think there's a high likelihood of that happening in the individual portion of the program. So I'm here for it.
I like a switch. I like it when the show goes from teams and pairs to individuals or any variation on that. I do prefer an individual game, just if I had to pick the format. Speaking of producers, I think we were all a little uncertain, or we all question if Wes really won the elimination against Dusty. It was a timed, and you never saw the clock.
I think he probably did. I think the excitement of Dusty, you know, spinning the wheel or whatever and Wes falling was, that seemed much faster than Wes gaining that time by methodically untying some ropes. I do miss the days. I mean, Natalie, they used to like put up, like they would say at the end of one round, like, Wes, you got him. You got it done in like whatever it was, 2 minutes and 38 seconds, right? They used to do that.
Oh yeah. They used to always, there was always a time clock too. That was at least on our screen.
Yeah. They have removed that element, which is kind of a bummer. Do you think they kept Wes around?
Me? Or Blaine? I don't, I mean, I think, what's the Dusty? I think his edit made him look a lot faster. I think the people, the competitors watching saw Wes come off the wheel faster once Dusty started spinning it. And I think that confused him. But, I mean, it all came down to the rope untying. Dusty moved through it a lot faster, but he wasn't as methodical. So I'm not, and honestly, I think if it was rigged, they would have made it a much closer time than 37 seconds or whatever it was.
Yeah, that's a pretty long time.
Yeah.
It's everything that led up to it is what made me think it, with Wes saying, this is probably my last challenge. The sadness of him possibly going home for the viewers. So Tyler's very boring, huh?
Who's Tyler?
Exactly. I knew that was coming. With the hair.
Is he the long hair guy?
The long hair, and they got him to kiss the girl at the bar.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a snooze fest. Both of them. Everybody involved in that kiss can just ride off into the sunset. It'll be fine.
Yeah, Alyssa hasn't done or proven too much. Speaking of someone who's not boring, at least, Josh should know when not to talk. I don't know how he has not learned this skill. Like, when Tiffany calls out the entire row of competitors, all you have to do is just stand there grumpily. And then he talks. I don't know why you had to call us out. It's not you. And it might have been him, but he doesn't have to say anything.
He has feelings hurt.
Yeah, I don't get it.
Somewhere his therapist is just thrilled every time he does that.
He needs therapy, probably.
I'm sure he's probably in it. I'm sure most of them are. I'm sure it's challenge mandated therapy.
He needs to see Paulie's.
Yeah.
Talking about people almost being non-existent on the show, the girl that Michaela was scared to go against, I swear that that's the first time she's been on this program.
Chanel. Yeah.
Where she, and that makes me wonder, kind of like when Fessy was getting almost no screen time early, I looked at Natalie and I was like, you know what this means? He's probably going to win, or at least make a very deep run. And I wondered the same thing with her, because she, the fear that everybody had about potentially going against her makes me think she has dominated things in a way that we aren't seeing. So I'll be interested to see how that plays out in the next few weeks.
She either does well or is just boring. There's nothing to put on the screen about her.
When Tori said we won't be able to hide behind teams anymore, and if you're not a good athlete, you're probably going to get exposed, she was one that I thought about, like, oh, this could be good, Tori versus Chanel.
And then Tiffany's elimination seemed to paint her as someone who wasn't going to do well anyway.
No. That was a cool elimination.
Kind of. With the basketball?
Like a, I mean, they used,
it's kind of like an early challenge elimination.
Yeah. There's usually like variations on a set of themes, like little twists on familiar games, mm-hmm. you know? That one was pretty out of left field. It was fun to watch.
I felt like I could have done that one.
It would have been fun to do. Maybe right. That's why I enjoyed watching it.
Yeah, a lot of these I'll see and I'm like, nope, not. I would never do that, or I would hate to do it. I could have done that one, though.
I would. Sign me up for that one all day instead of hold your arm over your head on an ice block.
Yeah, or hall brawl, where I would die. My life would end. Okay, Challenge USA. We're still in it. How many episodes are we thinking are left? 3 or 4? Well, it would have to be...
probably more than that. They got to shave off a bunch of folks.
They're probably taking 8 people to the final. So we got quite a ways to go.
Okay. They're airing 2 a week. I don't know why I said 3. It would be probably a nice, even number. Okay, we'll take a break here in the audio. I'll tell you what's up with the Alabama Tate-related things. And we'll talk telemarketers from HBO on the other side. If you're a book lover, no one has to tell you the wonder and excellence of a great book. But finding someone to talk about it? That's sometimes the problem. Well, not anymore. The best book podcast is here. Find Check Your Shelf one Wednesday of each month on thealabamatake.com or in any podcast app. You'll hear host Jamie Hanna and guests give a pleasant, insightful version of a book club as they cover notable reads every month. Subscribe where you get your podcast or simply go to The Alabama Take and find Check Your Shelf.
So Patrick J. Pespa's here.
Every scene, Patrick J. Pespa's.
Except that I noticed right at the end when he's meeting Blumenthal, he's like, oh, Patrick Pespa's.
Oh, really?
he drops the J. Maybe he's got nervous because he was meeting the senator.
Yeah, he's in the big time then. Telemarketers from HBO is a pretty unique documentary in that it's not really made by any seasoned or professional filmmakers at the time of its filming. Over the course of the filming, I think at least one of them becomes more professional filmmaker. The idea is that this one I'm speaking of, Sam is his name, and he has a hyphenated last name, Lipman.
Lipman something, right?
Lipman something. Gosh. Well, this one guy, Sam, had quit high school in the 9th grade, and he's told by his parents to get a job. An easy one for him is a call center job. He expects to be making calls for a company. He quickly realizes it's an insane work environment, and that's like a lot of episode one. And since he sort of have aspirations to be a documentarian anyway, he starts filming with rudimentary methods in this 2008, in that range.
Before 2010, definitely. Like, and YouTube was around, but that, you know.
And Sam,
still a while back,
befriends a few of the people that he's working there with. And so we'll spoil it. If you haven't seen it, we're going to break down what's happening in some of this and if it worked or not. Quick shout out to Todd Egger, who turned me on to this. I had debated watching it, and he sends me a text and asked me, have I watched it, and that it's insane, bonkers. And then I saw a lot of headlines that said basically the same thing. It drew me to it. So, Patrick J. Pespa's.
Patrick J. Pespa's here.
One of the main guys he befriends, and like really does befriend. They're buddies in the end.
Oh yeah, definitely.
A good documentary isn't just a good story. This one's a good story. Like, there's things to unravel and find out. But a good documentary has to have more. Did this one have anything beyond a crazy story for you?
I think that it did for me, mostly because they do kind of, like, it it kind of ends up in a different place that it started, because like with that first episode, it was basically just like, hey, look at how nuts this is, look mm-hmm. what we got away with, like, look at how no one cared. But then it kind of morphs through into following the money, mm-hmm. and it becomes kind of a bigger story, and that's where I got interest of, like, It was all intra. I'll say right up front, like each episode was interesting. I'm not sure if they needed three episodes or if it could have just been one longer movie, but that's neither here nor there. They were all interesting, but like once, if you're inclined to feel cynical about things, then you should probably watch this documentary because it will confirm your feelings.
It'll fuel that fire of cynicism.
Did for me. I mean,
yeah.
You know, if I'd always kind of looked askance at those FOP stickers, and then you watch this, and it's like, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll get into the details of it.
Yeah, definitely. Sorry, to answer your question, yes, for me, it provided more. And just following kind of, honestly, Pat's journey, too, was kind of interesting. Like, you kind of want things to work out for him.
Yeah, you're going exactly where I was mentally. It armed me with knowledge, which I think good documentaries can do. And I think that it was good in its scrappiness. You know, it gives you this idea that everyone's got a story and anyone can tell a story and maybe anyone can even expose an evil.
Yeah, totally. Because, like, especially, I mean, Patrick is really the main character for this, right? And he's like...
Yes.
Like, he's not anyone necessarily, like, special. He's certainly not a trained journalist or anything.
If
like
anything,
that.
He's the opposite. He's
yes, but he does it.
If you saw this guy in the street, or if you knew him as an acquaintance, you would think he's the bottom of society. You know, we said we'd get into spoilers. He's doing heroin at work. He's snorting heroin at work.
Amazing. This is a complete side note. It's amazing how many people are just fine with, like, yeah, film me doing this totally illegal thing. That's probably what we need for the trial, right?
I know, especially in that time period.
Yeah, seriously. Like, this was like before, going up on YouTube and stuff, too.
Yeah, this was way before everyone had an iPhone or an Android with a camera that they were just filming everything for TikTok or whatever. And this, he's like, yeah, I don't mind. And he's snorting heroin in the break room and then goes out and makes his calls.
Half asleep, getting those numbers.
but yet he'll snap out of his nod, as the dope people call it. He snaps out of his nod enough to respond to the people he's scamming. So, yeah, the intricacies, I guess if you're this far, you've watched it, but the intricacies are that it turns out they're working for this company, CDG, and this company goes to various places, like a fraternal order of police was one of their huge ones, and they'll say, look, if you'll let us use your name, image, likeness, you know, we'll give you 10% of anything we make, and we'll keep the 90. And the people are like, well, we're not doing that anyway. 10% is better than nothing, right? That's the idea. It does make sense, but it's so crooked, because they get in there and they hire people who are telling pretty blatant lies. Hey, I'm calling for... you know, they even get to the point where they're saying, I am a cop, I am an officer.
Yeah, like they had that one guy, I think it was in the second episode, right? The guy whose cell phone dies on him.
Yeah.
But he's literally, like, he's masquerading as a police officer. He's like, you know, I'm out on patrol or something. I forget what it was.
Yeah.
You know, that's beyond shady.
That's where it got sickening to me, is episode two. The guy's doing, he's going by his, he's got a different names he uses, all of which are fake and even tied to movies if you just listen carefully when he calls you. One of them was like Falcone or something.
It was totally Falcone.
Yeah. He is straight hustling innocent people out of money. This is where, to me, it got sickening, because he's not making a commission. None of these people are making commission. I know he wants to keep his job so that he can eat and obviously buy drugs and do whatever he wants, but to me, it was so sickening of how eager he was to take these people's money, which leads us obviously to the guy who's sitting in his home or apartment, Tommy, who is
The guy that's they blur his face and obscure his voice.
No, this is Tommy who was an ex murderer.
Oh, the convict. Yeah. Yes. Wow,
a lot of these people are convicts, and
I'm amazed he let people film, just because every time he's just like that bitch, like he's so nasty.
He's so nasty.
People hang up on him. I mean, I get it, right? It's probably not fun.
It's not. He was the one where they showed when people hung up on him, he would just wish really intricate deaths on him. And it was just scary knowing he had murdered someone in his past 30 years ago.
Pretty unpleasant.
He was not a friendly guy in the first place. You know, the call center people in the first episode, which is much more funny and rollicking, they get hung up on and they make jokes, or they simply go get a bag of Doritos and then come back and they're like playing baseball in the office.
Yeah, it's much more chill.
It's much more chill.
In a way.
to a degree.
To a degree, yeah.
But if the lesson here is that anyone can tell a story and anyone can expose that evil, we have to include the ending, which is that just because anyone can do it doesn't mean shit's going to happen, which is a sad ending.
I mean, they, you know, if you want to look at maybe a hopeful point of view, they did get this documentary made. You know, we're watching it. They got the Safdies involved with producing it. That's cool. But also, like, who knows? Especially because, you know, they kind of started to, especially in the third episode, the stuff that the, like, super PACs can do for raising money.
Yes.
It should be illegal, but it's probably not going to change. There's too much money being thrown around, and it benefits too many people.
It benefits the people in control, exactly.
Yeah, definitely.
I thought this documentary was pretty good for what it was, and obviously great for its shock value, but there were a few things that didn't work for me and didn't make it a five-star piece of television, and the cliffhangers ultimately proved to be red herrings.
I think
they didn't play out,
especially the one where it's like Pat had disappeared.
Yeah,
and then it's like, not really. You know,
he went away for a little. Or I suppose he did disappear for whatever,
for like a few but they weeks. Barely, you know, it's barely a thing. He's like, and then we can, you know, it's like I thought he was dead. Then we reconnected. You know, it's right, like five minutes, if that. That did not work for me, and that was one of the things. I think that's one of the things that I was thinking, did this have to be three episodes with that kind of ending, or could it have just been a more coherent whole?
Yeah, they referenced Michael Moore a few times, and it could have been a Michael Moore-style documentary. But the three episodes do lay out, like, the first episode's the rollicking good time of CDG, and then it gets shut down at the end, and then the second episode is the sickening side of just really scamming. And then the third episode is the PACs, where it's a political thing. So there is a clear division, and I thought that was pretty good. It's just the cliffhangers as red herrings didn't make for good TV. There's this tagline, I think, for the show, which is, we got to take them down from the inside. And that proved a little empty, though they do try. And kudos to Pespis for returning to the grind. In the last episode, you know, he's a little older. He's 10 years older, and he's not in great health. His family isn't, anyway. His wife, Sue, isn't. But he returns to the grind to shine a light on how PACs are just full of BS.
Yeah.
They don't even have to tell you any amount of money. They could 100% of that money could go to whatever. And it's scary.
It's a scam. And you know, they do talk about, you know, Pat, like Sam's like, Pat was born to be a whistleblower. And there's that one bit where I do think that, like, that, like you said, the tagline doesn't 100% work, but I just love the bit. I loved it. When Pat's like, I guess you could say I am a whistleblower. Like, he just seems so proud of himself.
He'd never realized it.
Yeah, it was. I thought that, you know, so that part of it, like, the tagline is a little misleading, but I do still think it gets at something.
Yeah. Patrick's evolution and realization that he is not a bottom-dwelling heroin addict.
Yeah.
Is really the cool point of
it's touching, you know, because there's a bit that I mentioned. I think there's a bit where he's like, we are journalists, you know, like we're doing journalism, you know? And it's like, yeah, he is. Like, you can't say you're not, right? And it was kind of like what you said when we first started talking about this is, you know, sort of the hook there is like anyone can do it. It doesn't take a hero, you know, just takes someone tenacious, a normal person who's tenacious. And
Did you love it as when he bought the hat in the cowboy hat in Texas? He was like, I'm in Texas.
I'm damn thing everywhere.
I love that so much. Have you ever gotten these calls?
You know, I probably. I definitely, the ones that I mostly used to get. I usually, so I have a 205 area code. So if anything comes from, so if something comes from to anything that's not Connecticut, I just won't pick it up. Because I know, so that usually works for me. But, you know, you'll stick up the people that are like, hey, your warranty's about to expire.
That's the big one.
Student loans get a lot for student loans. Like, you can refinance. My folks I worked with at UConn used to get the, like, you're about to be arrested for tax fraud ones. Like, you did something wrong. You know, the one where they try and be like, you have to do something right now or the IRS is going to lock you up.
Yeah, that's straight thievery.
Not
even like hidden behind the fundraising curtain. My dad used to get these calls on his landline, and I'm talking 2001, 2002, 2003, and he would donate, especially to the disabled veterans.
Yeah.
Because we would get these envelopes, these very kind of big envelopes to the disabled veterans where they would have a sticker for him.
Yeah.
And so I knew he was. And I think I'd occasionally see him write a check or something or be on the phone with them. And I never thought much other than I wouldn't give them money. And that's about all I thought. I didn't think this was a scam sort of thing. But, wow. And what they do is they prey on this type of person, whether they realize it or not. I'm sure they just have a database of phone numbers, but they end up preying on these people who are idiots and scared of cops or just love sucking the dicks of authority.
I thought it was really grotesque when they talk about, they kind of mention, like, they've got Spanish language callers, and then they'll target other, like immigrant groups, right? Who they're like, oh, they think that this is like the police shaking them down for money, and then they get their sticker and everything's going to be okay.
Yeah, and later on, that's stores
just,
that are
really gross.
Yeah, it is. That is really gross. But that's a community you work with, some, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with you though, Blaine. It is kind of like it takes advantage, like. Watching this documentary, it reminded me of how in the town I used to live in, there was like from the, I don't even know, like 2019 to 20, well into 2021, there was a store that just sold Trump stuff. It was wall to wall. I don't know if like the guy behind it, what his ideology was, but I guarantee at some point someone there was like, yeah, we're going to make money off of this. And it just absolutely takes advantage of that. And it takes advantage of like polarization, right? Like they were doing stuff where they were playing on white folks' fears about Black Lives Matter and stuff like that. Not always in so many words, but you know, like, oh, they're trying to defund the police. Can we count on you?
Yeah. Oh no. Yeah, that's in the documentary. No, they use that language.
It's destructive. Like it's utterly destructive and divisive. In addition to like taking advantage of people's goodwill.
What scared me was he was an FCC guy who took down the CDG, sort of like the first time around before it's like whack-a-mole, you know, they pop up. But he states police unions are incredibly powerful. Like, I did what I could and that's about it.
It's true. I mean, I'm part of a union. I'm proud to be part of a union.
As am I, and I was actually going to bring that up.
But police unions are often, they're often terrible. they're the bad unions.
but kudos to the union for like the street officers.
Yeah,
who seem to do it on the up and up.
PB, I never heard of that one before.
It's not the FOP.
It's the
FOP
something.
I think that's.
I don't remember. It doesn't matter.
The FOP are the ones who sort of take care of the officers, the chiefs, the people who already probably have it okay to a degree.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, the robocalls are insane when they start, and this is the third episode where it's more modernized, and they're using AI and even using dead people's voices. I had no idea that was happening. Because I don't answer them, so there's a chance that when you answer these, you're talking to a straight up computer that just knows what to say. It's been programmed what to say, and it's using somebody's voice.
You know, even to the point where you know they had Patrick talking on the phone with the AI, and he's like, "Are you a cop?" And it's like, "Yes." You know, it'll just say whatever to make you believe, you know, believe it, right?
That is wild. Did the documentary make you want to answer the calls now?
No. No, not at all. Like, just okay. Because, first off, who has time for that? But also, well, it's just like, you know, no, I don't want to engage with this in any way.
I respond to the text messages sometimes.
Oh, I never do.
That's
how they know your phone number works, and you just get more.
I know, but I have answered a few. Yeah, the political action stuff is just, it was good in that it exposed to me how the system is so messed up. It's just one screw in a huge machine.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just kind of scary and disturbing.
It really, like, anytime you have something like, I think I've felt mostly the same way. Like, anytime you have something like this where it's kind of how the sausage gets made of mm-hmm. our political system, it's like, it's sobering, right? Because it is, at the end of the day, it's money. Even if someone, like, I liked Barack Obama fine, but he had tons of money. Mm-hmm. And it was money that greased his way in there. And, you know, it just comes down to money. And that's what is going on with these PACs.
Yeah.
It just all comes down. And, you know, maybe it goes to a candidate. Maybe it just goes to a slush fund somewhere. Yeah. No way to tell.
Quite gross. As much as Patrick's an underdog and entertaining for TV, was it wise to have him interview some of these people?
Well, there's the bit where... Like, I was rooting for him, right? Because I was like, you know, it's great. Like, but also, there was the bit where Sam's like, I didn't realize that he's just terrible at this, but he is. But they still let him keep doing it.
But, and that's like one line in the second episode, and then he does way more interviews after that.
Yes.
Yeah, he's terrible at it. Is that part of the allure, though, I guess?
I don't know. Maybe. I mean, I kind of liked that they let him do it. I wonder.
I do too.
And yeah. Like, obviously, he was very tenacious, and he was pretty. He wouldn't take no for an answer for a lot of things. Yeah. But also, yeah, he was not a trained interviewer. You could tell.
You wanted to step in and tell him, hold on, let them answer first.
Yeah.
I saw a very sad comment on a message board. Sad because it's true. Is that the senator probably did not take him as seriously because he had a tooth or two missing?
Oh, probably. Yeah, he had some front teeth missing. That's my senator, Blumenthal.
No way.
Yeah, Connecticut.
Connecticut.
When they're looking at the police patches on the wall.
Yes.
There's one that's the Vernon Police Department. That's the next town over from me.
Yeah.
It's like 10 minutes from where I sit. Yeah, Blumenthal. He was the attorney general. You know, now he's a he's the senior senator from Connecticut. Like, they were showing stuff. Like, when he's by the submarine that's down in Groton, Connecticut, Electric Boat, General Dynamics make submarines down there, nuclear submarines.
Why did I think Dakota's?
Yeah, no, he's Connecticut.
Okay.
I did vote for him. It seemed better than the alternative.
I understand. Vulture critic Roxana Hadidi asks the question, what do we want from documentaries anyway? She thinks that this documentary kind of poses that a little.
That's a good question.
Yeah, I think it's fine. Do you want them rebel rousing in people's face, exposing truths? Or do you want them just, you know, documenting and laying out something in this?
Yeah, and I mean, obviously we can all think, including this one, is probably more rabble rousing. And then you can, if I hadn't been about to say his name, I couldn't, is it Wiseman? Really famous documentarian, right? And like the last documentary of his, I saw, he did the Titicut Follies, was his big first one about mental health in Massachusetts back in the 60s. But he did this library, this 3-hour documentary called Ex Libris that is just about the New York Public Library. And there's no commentary. It's just people talking and then stuff happening. And like, they're both, I don't think I could say one is better than the other. They're both different and they have different ends. You know, they have different means and they have different ends.
Mm.
And they're going to provoke different responses in you.
Yeah. You and I both are part of a union. And I just thought to myself, can you imagine if I'm part of AEA, which is Alabama Education, Could you imagine if the Alabama Education Union tried to raise money via phone and only gave like 5% into anything education or teacher related?
I mean, no, like state, I'm a state employee in a state that has not particularly well managed its pension fund. So I often get, me and my coworkers often get cast as villains by the politicians. If we even try, I can't even imagine how they would, we would just be, it would be over for us. Like, I can't imagine how mad people would be. But it's police, like, it, you know, it's police and veterans, right? Like, people get away with that because they know it's a weak spot.
Police, veterans, firefighters.
It's just really shady.
Yeah. You use those and you can get away with more because people will turn a blind eye to it because of just the name. Just the, just the, what the career that you,
I mean, there's a reason, right? That the, you know, there's a reason that the military partners with professional sports, you know, like the NFL to integrate this militaristic stuff into like football games and things, because, you know, they know like that it helps normalize it and people won't question it. Because if you question it, you might be questioning the troops.
And that is a deep topic for another day.
Yes, it is. Well, I feel like this really did kind of get into that, though. Where, with it,
it
was,
did.
What it's doing, how people are taking advantage, and really how people are taking advantage of polarization.
Yeah, I think that's good to note. And, and what it does. Talking about it made me, I think, appreciate what they did even more. Though I still liked it. I think it had its flaws, but it was still, I'm glad, it, like you said, HBO gave them the chance to give it a venue.
Yeah, I would sum up the whole thing as like, this sounds negative, but I don't mean it that way. I actually liked that it was this, a little bit of a bait and switch, right? Because it was just like, check out how crazy everything is at CEG. Can you believe we got away with this? But then they go into it more. Yeah. And I think if they hadn't done that, I wouldn't have enjoyed watching it as much, or been glad I watched it like I did.
It could not have sustained that office space antics for three episodes.
Absolutely not.
But I'm glad I got it in the first episode.
Man, some of it, like, just everyone, like, why'd you go there? Because it was a party. Like, just seems like an actual riot.
There was a guy who, I think that's who you're quoting. He was a guy who just like, I wouldn't work anywhere else. If they were if they were hiring right now, I'd go.
Yes.
I mean, I get it, I guess.
Yeah.
There was a time when I would have loved that environment, probably.
Sure.
Maybe. A little too hectic, but maybe. Okay. Funny stuff. That's the end of our episode this week. Thanks for listening. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or subscribe to us on Spotify, wherever you get podcasts. We're also, you can stream it from the alabamatake.com, our production company. You can watch it on YouTube in two different versions. Anyway, we're here for you as far as you can reach out to us online, social media, and we'll holler back at you. See you. We'll talk and see maybe everyone next week. See you.